This is the EWN Radio Network.
She's smart. She's successful. She's an executive. She's an entrepreneur. And she's the chief executive of her story. Who is she? She's you. Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network. Your Power Lunch Hour, keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome back to the Power Lunch. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como. Happy New Year. Happy 2016. Can you believe it? It feels like the 2015 year just really ran right by. Fortunately, it's gone and a new year has started, and I'm really excited, as I hope you are, for this new year. We also hope you had a really great holiday. I know for many of you across the United States, there was just some very crazy weather down in the south. In our old home of Dallas, Texas, we know the Texans definitely got hit some hard with some really bad weather, some collateral weather that came from tornadoes. So our prayers are with those folks. And then for those of us on the East Coast, we had a crazy, unseasonably warm holiday. And for those of you wanting a white Christmas, that wasn't really what you needed. And then those on the West Coast, finally getting some rain. I just got off a red-eye flight this morning, and very interesting to be in the 40s and the 50s in L.A., so that was definitely a change for me. I want to welcome you back all for the new year. We're really excited about having you join us, and we're looking forward to some really great new shows this year. I want to make sure that we also call out some of the things that we want to promote for all of our listeners. As you know, that we are a part of the EWN Radio Network. We're very proud to be a part of that organization. Do check us out on any of our other sister shows on www.ewnradionetwork.com. You'll find our show. There's a link to it on the bottom right, or you'll go see it under the shows. And then there's also a number of great shows that you'll find on there that are inspired to help women entrepreneurs. So if you're looking for a New Year's resolution, you want to stay informed, whether it's our new show on the Power Lunch, there's also some great sister shows that we've got there about being an entrepreneur, about growing your business, about being a mom. I mean, you name it, we've got those shows. We're all on the Blog Talk Radio, so you can get our podcast anytime, whether you're on iTunes or you want to go to the Blog Talk website directly or even on our website. So again, that's www.ewnradionetwork.com. You can find our show. You can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+. So let's go ahead and get started. We first want to call out really tragic news this past week. As you know, my name is Mona Lisa, and Natalie Cole passed away this past week. We want to send out our condolences to her family. Natalie Cole, wonderful, wonderful musician, died at the age of 65 over New Year's Eve. She was an American singer-songwriter, and if you don't know why I'm particularly a fan of Natalie Cole, her father brought forward the song The Mona Lisa. So it was a tragic. She had gone in recently for some, I believe about several years ago, she had actually gone in for a transplant, I believe, and she had died of heart failure, actually a kidney transplant in 2009, and she was diagnosed with IPAH and then unfortunately had succumbed to heart failure this past week. So our hearts and our prayers go out to a wonderful singer and a wonderful legacy left by the Cole family. And we've been playing quite a bit of her songs out there. So moving on to the next story, definitely a little bit different. But I don't know if you saw this. It's definitely got some conversation is probably the best way to say it. Forbes recently published an article, and the title is called Which Retailers Charge the Largest Pink Tax? Ladies, you know what I'm talking about, whether or not you know it's called a pink tax. What it is the article focuses on the fact that women in general pay more money for their services than men. And believe it or not, we know this because when you go to the dry cleaner, I'm continuously amazed how much more money I pay for a shirt to be laundered than my husband does. And it's very common that that happens. But the study was actually done with the gender pricing study was done by the New York City Department of Consumer Affairs. The report entitled, quote, From Cradle to Cane, The Cost of Being a Female Consumer, compares the prices of nearly 800 products pairs with female and male analogs. Overall, the agency found that women's products cost 7% more than similar products of men. Isn't that crazy? I think what got me about this survey was I didn't realize how many products are absolutely identical except the color. Isn't that's just amazing. Well, a key concern in assessing whether the higher prices for female products are justified by differentially higher costs. A company, for example, might have higher fixed cost per unit on women's products if they sold at a lower volume than men's products, which I don't believe because I believe women buy more than men. The report also acknowledges that there may be legitimate drivers behind some portion of the price discrepancy. So that's the caveat. That's the hedge that the report is saying. So they're not accusing these consumers or these retailers of purposely increasing the cost. What they're saying is we're sure that there's some legitimate. We didn't look into some of the reasons why. We just noticed that they're very different. But the report, what strengthens the report, this is the one that gets me, and I suggest you look at it. We did post it on our social media sites, is that it took photos of a variety of products where, folks, it's highly unlikely that these are different products. They look identical, but the color is different. So one of them is they post a picture of my first scooter. The red one is for the boys. It's unisex. And the girls one. And so the boys, Radio Flyer scooter, $24. And this is at Target's website. The pink scooter, identical, literally identical picture, everything, and even on the features, the product, the weight, the size, the dimensions are identical. So if you look at the product dimensions and everything, it's $44. Can you believe that? An additional $20. So that's what they're calling is the pink price. And then the study goes on to take pictures of a variety of different websites and retailers who look based on the product description, product weight, product, yet unit price, everything that they're trying to show there. And they do show, I mean, it even goes down to shampoo. And so what they did find was, for example, Target charged $13 more for a pink helmet than it did for a boy's helmet. Levi's charges more than $20 for women's jeans. Walgreens charges more for women's cartridges, for razor cartridges, about 23% more. And then Walgreens charged 35% less for men's 3-in-1 shampoo than it did for women. Well, to continue on with the study, which I like because I did study it, the report actually goes down to the specifics, and it shows a chart of gender disparities by store and by product type. And so, you know, the Forbes article says we don't know if public shaming of companies is a goal that they should be aspiring to with this report. But if anything, I think for many of us, it at least qualifies or puts to context what we know we feel in our pocketbooks. If you have daughters, you spend more on products, whether it's shampoo, whether it's soap. For instance, I like a certain type of soap and it's identical to what my husband and my sons use, but my gel soap or my liquid soap is always higher than my son's Axe soap, and yet my soap I would think is the same size and it has just as many perfumes or colors. That's, I think, what's the most interesting about, because we all know it. Well, let's, you know, get down to the basics here. So the table shows that Club Monaco holds the honor of having the most disparate prices, charging an average of 29% on women's products than men's. Urban Outfitters and Levi's were not far behind. They were about 24.6, 24.3%, so about almost 25%. The most substantial, quote, pink tax, which is basically what it costs more for us to be on the pink side of the gender divide. The most substantial pink taxes and other product categories were charged by the following retailers. Carter's for children's clothing charged an additional 18%. CVS for personal care products was about 14%, and Target for senior home health care products was about 12%. The most substantial retailer pricing differential for was Toys and Accessories, charged by Babies R Us, same company. It was an 11% differential. But let's also call out the people who do pretty good. Oshkosh B'gosh, and now I know this because I'm not going to go to Carter's. Oshkosh B'gosh, for example, charges the same price on its boys and girls children's clothing about 82% of the time. So, folks, you have children, boys and girls, you do care about prices, you got to go to Oshkosh. Costco, on the single senior home healthcare product pair, analyzed the same prices. American Apparel half the time charged higher prices on its adult male clothing, but still it was a little bit more in line. The report doesn't mention it, but it does show that Old Navy on average charges 12% more on men's adult clothing than on women's. The New York City report mentions a 1994 California study which estimated that women effectively paid an annual gender tax of approximately $1,300 for same services as men. Whether you're going to call this a pink tax, based on the Forbes article, a gender tax, or shopping, hashtag shopping while female, the report shows that substantial price discrimination is still very much with us. Probably not justified, and I'm probably sure, as well as the report says, maybe there's some credible reasons why it's out there. But still to note, folks, you're not making it up. There definitely is a reason why you're out there feeling the pinch, because women are, in general, paying more for what they've got out there. So the report's going to be posted out there. We're going to list it out there so you could take a look. And then also, I think, pay attention to the fact. I think what it has to minimally happen is we have to voice more concerns. The report unequivocally is going to create more reports. I think Forbes posting it will probably spurn some other studies, whether they're done by universities or working groups. I think that that will help bring it down, but also bring an awareness to a number of these retailers, because it's just crazy. Next, we're going to go on to sports. Ronda Rousey's suiting up for Sports Illustrated. She has confirmed that she will appear in its 2016 swimsuit issue. Not too many people are thrilled about it, but it's great that a sports athlete like Ronda will actually be able to get have some airtime. So it's not just only models that are going to be on the front page, but she definitely is a beautiful young lady, and what she's done with her career has been amazing. So congratulations. We're going to, I'm sure, hear quite a bit about that as they get closer. The other thing to note is one of my favorite athletes, Serena Williams, was ranked as one of the most beloved athletes of all time. Now, this isn't just, in tennis. She is the greatest player of all time. So the Huffington Sports just posted an article on her, I think, 2 days ago. Yes, yesterday. It's titled, America Now Thinks Serena Williams is the Greatest Tennis Player Ever. I'm sorry, it's Tennis Player. And that's as much of a victory for us as it is for her. From the article, it says specifically, quote, Americans now consider Serena Williams as the greatest tennis player ever and the fourth greatest athlete of all time. She beats out Peyton Manning, Joe Montana, LeBron James in the category of greatest player of all time. And this is according to a new Harris poll. The Harris poll, which surveyed several thousand people online between September 9th and September 17th, was once again headlined by Michael Jordan, who grabbed the number one spot, Babe Ruth number two, and Muhammad Ali rounding out the top three. But the number four seed went to Serena Williams, the only woman in this year's top 10 and the highest seeded still active athlete. Isn't that amazing? Williams was the most popular among females and millennials, with women ranking her number two all time, and those between the ages of 18 and 35 ranking her number three. In the tennis category alone, she swept by Roger Federer, Pete Sampras, Arthur Ashe, and sister Venus Williams en route to the top seed. Well, Serena Williams did deserve it. Her long list of on-court honors doesn't need to be repeated, but she's won 21 major championships. She's completed two what they call Serena Slams. And in 2015, she almost nabbed the first calendar Grand Slam, a title at each of the four majors tournaments in the same year since Steffi Graf managed the feat in 1988. Now, imagine this. She won her first major in 1999. That's 17 years ago. And she's still young, healthy, and on fire. So, congratulations, Serena. The last time we reported, she was on the cover of Sports Illustrated as the most the athlete of the year. I mean, you have to admit, whether it's the end of the year or the beginning of the year, Serena is on fire. So congratulations, Serena, the fourth overall greatest athlete of all time. It'll be interesting when this is ranked next year and the years after if Serena's going to continue to move that forward. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to have women executives and women business executives who've made the news. There's been a lot of great movement in the boardroom as well as the executive seats. We also have this great segment on women entrepreneurs. If you're looking to kick off this year. 2016 is your year where you're going to be a woman entrepreneur. If you're going to be out there trying to look for an opportunity to be a business owner, we've got a great last half where we're going to talk about all the opportunities and some of the great things that are out there to get women started in business and also support them. So more when we return.
Are you an entrepreneur, coach, or consultant who is tired of constantly searching for the next client? Are you ready to get your expertise out of your head, into the world, and packaged into a profitable online course that delivers a steady stream of your perfect ideal clients to your door and a steady, predictable source of revenue? Hi, this is Janine Blackwell, creator of Create Six Figure Courses Virtual Bootcamp. And I've created my own seven-figure courses, and I've walked hundreds of experts like you through the step-by-step of creating and launching a profitable online course. I'd like to invite you to a free online training I'm hosting for you called The 7 Steps to Creating and Launching Your Profitable Online Course. I'm going to show you exactly how to create your course, market your course, and automate delivery of it so you can get your course up and running fast and have it work for you 24/7. You can grab your spot for this free training at www.createmyonlinecourse.com. So join me at www.createmyonlinecourse.com.
Did you know banks decline more commercial loans than they approve? In fact, national banks approve less than 20% of all business loans submitted. And that doesn't include the loans that don't even qualify. But at Interpares Capital, we are here to overcome those odds. We are a nationally recognized commercial brokerage firm with access to thousands of public and private lending institutions. That means we have more options to finance you than your bank does, whether you are a startup or in need of debt refinancing or growth capital. We can help. We do the heavy lifting so you can focus on running your business. Contact us today for a free consultation with one of our business advisors at 855-365-1930. At Interpares Capital, we are your business partner in finance.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network. Your Power Lunch Hour, keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome back to the Power Lunch. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como, learning how to use the mute button. Welcome back. We have another segment for you talking about women who made the headlines. We're sponsored by Interpares Capital. When you need capital for your small real for your small business, your startup, or commercial real estate, go to the advisors at www.interparescapital.com. So when we left off, we were talking about women who made the headlines. We were going to talk about women in the headlines. I apologize. We're going to talk about that now. We talked about the concept of this pink tax that's going on. I would love to hear your thoughts on that, because it would be interesting to see if we could also see where that discrepancy goes the other way. I'm sure that there are products that men pay more, but I want to be fair and see if we can come up with any. Before we get to women in the news, I also wanted to talk about some women who made the headlines. They're not very well known, like some of the executives I'm going to talk about, because they're astronauts, believe it or not. Glamour News just published an article a day ago. The title of the article is Women Astronauts Who Can't Wait to Go. And on the cover of this article is a picture of four women who are geared up and suited up as the next new astronauts that are going to go into the air. First grade Jessica Mayer made a drawing of herself standing on the moon when she was a kid, and turns out that she decided she was going to be one as she aspired. We're talking about four women, and their names are Nicole Anupaman, Anne McCain, Jessica Mayer, and Christina Hammock-Koch. They're photographed at NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston. The article on Glamour News does a great job of actually interviewing each of the women on why they wanted to become an astronaut and what inspired them. What's interesting about all of them is for the first time in history, NASA's latest class of astronauts is 50% female. Isn't that amazing? This is a fearless group of people, and their ages are actually varied. One of them, Mir, and her colleagues are both 36. Christina Hammack Koch is 37, and Nicole Anupaman is 38. So they've been training. This isn't, you know, something that you get into in your 20s, because you have to have tons of years, at least a decade of training, but also majority of them, if not all of them, if they're not scientists, they're actually soldiers, the majority of them coming either from NASA or, the Navy or the Air Force. So do read the article. I think it's great to get to meet, and we want to promote especially that there are women that are getting into fields that are predominated by men. But it's an interesting interview with each one of them, and hopefully we can inspire more young women to go into STEM. So let's move on to women who are in science and technology, kind of, sort of, maybe. I don't know where you would put the auto industry. Fortune's Most Powerful Women of the Year 2015 was Mary Barra. Mary Teresa Barra is the CEO and now newly made minted chairman of the board. She made headlines this past week for a few reasons. Number one, because she made chairman of the board, a really big feat for holding both chairman and CEO title. And I believe there's only a dozen or so women that have both titles, women like HP's, Xerox Ursula Burns. We've got a Ginny Rometty for Big Blue. And then you also have now Mary Barra. So what's great is that she's actually completed this feat in a few years of only taking the helm as CEO. She's only had the position of CEO since January 15th of 2014. So on the anniversary of her appointment, 2 years later, she gets the CEO title. So that's pretty darn good for her. The news articles, though, where we bring it up, Mary's always making the news, is, if let's talk first about her title of getting chairman. There's concern on whether or not GM actually did the right thing. And what's important to note is, I don't think in the article that actually focuses on this, doesn't say that they're focusing on her as the individual person. It's more of a question on whether the division of labor and the wearing of the dual hats of chairman and CEO is better suited for the public company. Because in the whole point of a board is to give an independent perspective. You always want people from the company on the board so they're not making decisions and not influenced independently. But when the chairman is also the CEO, you're kind of your own boss. And so GM has an interesting history on it that they've done it many, many times before. Forbes contributor David Kelly posted an article this past week. The title is, Has GM Doomed CEO Mary Barra by Making Her Chairman? Pretty heavy title, not very positive. But the article is very, I would say, critical in a constructive manner on whether or not this is the right thing due to the history of GM combining the two jobs and that not being a success. And so I'll quote from the article, the last four combined chairmen and CEOs hardly distinguished themselves in holding both roles. Ackerson was an outsider from the telecommunications industry, presided over the Ignition cover-up. Wagner held both posts, CEO and CEO and chairman, from 03 to 09 for 6 years and ran the company into a financial buzzsaw, a job that was finished by the economic crash of 2008. Smith, before him, presided over an epic market share decline and dumbing down of GM's products and brands at a time when the U.S. economy was booming in the mid and late 1990s. Robert Stemphill, before him, had both jobs as CEO and chairman and was ousted after 2 years. Roger Smith, before that, held both jobs, and GM veterans attest that communication in the C-suite and among others is a problem because they feel that the board rubber stamps everything that the firm wants. And in fairness, the article continues to note, GM has a lousy track record for combining jobs as CEO and chairman. Now, going on, he does continue to say Barra, he doesn't have anything Barra against her personally. In fact, she has the tools to be one of the best GM CEOs ever. Unlike her predecessors, Ackerson, Whitaker, Fritz Henderson, Wagner, Smith & Smith, she's an engineer. And she knows good products, and she knows how to lead a global enterprise. The five CEOs before her outsourced product development and decisions to others, while Mary has kept that secret sauce. I know that's a cliche term, but she's kept that secret sauce core to GM, stating, quote, product is not my thing, but we want to control it. The financial specialists with Ivy League MBAs devoid of knowledge of or feel that the cars or trucks are at the heart of a business and instead obsessed over process of running a global company. This is what's important. She's bringing to the table a different skill set. Now, in fairness, what the article was highlighting, and the track record for GM and their board making these types of decisions isn't a strong one. Maybe they should look at replacing some of the other board members, but this is definitely something that's going to be a focus absolutely as the analysts study on whether or not this is something that she can pull off successfully. So hopefully that we wish her luck. We first off want to congratulate her for attaining another board seat, which is great for women in general in the boardroom, and for being able to have the honor of having both CEO and chair. GM's Barra also made the news again this past week because of the big annual consumer electronics convention that happened, consumer electronics shows that happens in Vegas. So every year when new products come out, if you're not familiar with CES, I am being from the financial services industry specifically because being from E-Trade, they were a big proponent of CES. Why they were is a different story. But anyhow, Las Vegas did host a number of the automobiles that were out there, automobile firms that were trying to showcase their electronic cars. Mary specifically attended to tout her company's newest electric vehicle during the CES, and she gave a keynote speech calling it the next step in the transportation journey. Barra has confirmed that her vehicle will be in production this year and would sell after government rebates for about $30,000. It's, you know, a price point that's similar to Nissan's Leaf electronic vehicle. Unlike the Leaf, however, Bolt, GM's electric range, is double the Japanese electronic vehicle at 200 miles. Isn't that amazing? 200 miles on a charge. Barra goes on to be quoted, "The way people are getting around is changing fast. Our Bolt delivers on our promise of low price, high range, and an unparalleled level of connectivity. It amounts to an upgradable platform for new technologies." End of quote. Barra was so keen on touting the advantages of a company the size of GM has over the number of growing upstarts. This is something that I think she commented that is actually very strong for her organization. So you have a number of new startups that are trying to get into the space, whether it's Google's self-driving car program or Faraday and their billion-dollar commitment to a new electric car manufacturing plant up in Las Vegas as well. And then, in fairness, you also have Tesla. But Barra pointed a reference was very pointed in her comparison to what her company is doing in creating electronic vehicles and how that's going to benefit the consumer. And this is one reason why I would go with hers versus some of the other smaller name brands. Barra goes on to say, "Unlike some electronic vehicle customers, GM's Bolt customers do not have to drive to another state to buy or service our cars. We have over 3,000 dealerships, and we believe in that model. Some like to say it is size is our disadvantage, but to newcomers," and she's making fun of like the Faradays, "who have little or no experience when it comes to production on a global scale, we can deliver." You go, girl. You just told them how to have it. So congratulations to Mary Barra. I think the Bolt is going to be very interesting on seeing how it's going to make its way around. I think what's also going to be good for them is they've got to get it into the marketplace of the rental car agencies, because I have seen the I've seen more of electric cars trying to make that round. I mean, I think it's a great idea if you want to get engagement. I do believe that the rental car business, that gives everybody a chance to drive your car without really owning it. And if it's going to be around $30,000, it's a great price point that I think will be beneficial in cities like in San Francisco and LA, and in cities that are like Seattle that are very well known for being progressive when it comes to the electronic vehicle stage. So congratulations again to Mary for getting the title, and congratulations on their new car being presented at the CES. We're going to go on to another woman who made the news this past week, Mary Dillon. Congratulations, another board seat. Mary Dillon is the CEO of Ulta, and she now adds to her title She now adds to her title Board of Directors for Starbucks. Starbucks announced this past week that Mary Dillon, CEO of Ulta Beauty, was selected to the Starbucks Board of Directors, and she will serve on the board's Compensation and Management Development Committee. Dillon brings 3 decades of experience leading consumer-driven brands to build brand engagement and drive profitable growth. What do we know about Mary? Mary Dillon joined Ulta Beauty from U.S. Cellular, where she served as president and CEO. She was also director since June 2010. From 2005 to 2010, Mary Dillon served as Global Chief Marketing Officer and EVP of McDonald's. And prior to McDonald's, she was the executive at PepsiCo, where she held various positions, including responsible for specifically the president of the Quaker Foods division. So she's I did not know much about her, but she's definitely not new in the executive roles. This is great for Starbucks as they're starting to expand their roles and seeing how they can take their brand to the next level. And congratulations to Mary Dillon, newest board member of Starbucks. Last but not least, before we go to break, we're going to talk about a woman who's killing it in the news, a woman executive because of her pay package. Apple's top women are making more than their boss and CEO, Tim Cook. Fortune just published this past week an article, Apple's Top Women Makes More Than CEO Tim Cook. And it talks about the new announcement of pay that was released in a proxy statement that was filed by Apple this past Wednesday. Well, the proxy statements always list what the executives make because of the transparency, because it's a public company. CEO Tim Cook, he earned about $10 million last year. Not huge in comparison to other high-value Silicon Valley companies. The other top five members of the executive team that received more than twice that figure was Angela Ahrendts. She earned $25 million. CFO Luca Maestri is nipping at her heels with a pay package of $25 million as well, and just short probably by $400,000. This isn't the first time that Angela, Apple's SVP of retail and online stores, has come on top of the pay pile. She was the most highest paid woman on Fortune's 2015 list of most powerful women, and she is the highest paid female executive in the U.S. Now, what's interesting about that is the woman I had just spoken about earlier, Mary Barra, is Fortune's number one most powerful woman in business on Fortune's list, but she's not the highest. It's Angela. Angela's pay package is the highest in the industry, and she's also obviously one of the most powerful women. What do you know about her? Well, she's the former CEO of Burberry, and when you go into an Apple store, that has everything to do with Angela's influence. Her job is to oversee the retail launch of Apple Watch as well as owning the retail stores. The Apple Watch has received some mixed reviews, but Angela's ability to integrate the online and the retail divisions as well as expanding the company's presence in China has definitely taken off. So Angela she's proving that in certain cases and in certain sectors, women, or actually in certain business units, women are making more than men, or if not at par. What's great to hear about what Apple is doing is that, and they're very different than some of the traditional Silicon Valley firms. And I find that very interesting given the fact that last year we talked about a study about women being treated from a Silicon Valley perspective. We talked about what happened with Ellen Powell and her struggles with pay and the very public lawsuit that she had in terms of her opportunity. So you've got the dichotomy, or maybe the paradox, of two types of Silicon Valley. You've got the Silicon Valley where they're paying women in the top ranks, whether that's Apple acknowledging Angela's strength and she makes more than her boss, to the likes of Sheryl Sandberg, who makes, she's a billionaire, to the likes of Ruth Porat, who's the CFO over at Google, who's making $26 million. I mean, these are some interesting facts about women who are killing it on the pay package in Silicon Valley. And then you have the opposite end of it, where women are still in the minority in terms of executives of women in the industry. Women in STEM are not as common and still are fighting the trend so that it is not uncommon. And then when you go, you know, to lower ranks for the middle management, you're still not seeing women in the ranks as in terms of equality. One of the things that the article did state very clearly is Apple, like its fellow tech giants, Facebook and Google, is still heavily skewed towards men, as I had mentioned. The latest diversity report cited that a third of the global workforce is female, of its global workforce is female, and this number even gets smaller as it moves farther up in the food chain for management, and women only comprise 28% of the leadership ranks. And that's as of June 2015. But they're making progress. And so what's good to know is that you still see some really big changes with women in these positions. It's going to continue to take, I think, a generation where that's not necessarily a big thing, right? That it's just so common to have women in executive roles and making some great, great salary packages. But we're still just not there yet. But congratulations, Angela, that $25 million, very well earned. Love what you're doing with Apple stores. Not a fan of the Apple Watch yet because I'm not into wearables all that much. Still kind of getting my arms around it, but I still think that there's a great opportunity there. So we're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about women who want to be entrepreneurs, women who want to delve into business ownership. We've got some great tips, some great tools, and some great sites for you to go to get either funding or some mentorship, because we do think that this is the year that women are going to continue to break out even more so in entrepreneurship roles. So when we come back, we'll give you that update. More when we return.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who have been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called accelerated networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
Did you know banks decline more commercial loans than they approve? In fact, national banks approve less than 20% of all business loans submitted. And that doesn't include the loans that don't even qualify. But at Inter Pares Capital, we are here to overcome those odds. We are a nationally recognized commercial brokerage firm with access to thousands of public and private lending institutions. That means we have more options to finance you than your bank does, whether you are a startup or in need of debt refinancing or growth capital. We can help. We do the heavy lifting so you can focus on running your business. Contact us today for a free consultation with one of our business advisors at 855-365-1930. At Inter Pares Capital, we are your business partner in finance.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
She's smart. She's successful. She's an executive. She's an entrepreneur. And she's the chief executive of her story. Who is she? She's you. Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network, your Power Lunch Hour keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome back to the second half of the Power Lunch. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como, sponsored by Inter Pares Capital. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for kicking off the new year right. We want to give you some tools. If you're looking to get into the business of being a woman entrepreneur, or maybe you just want to expand yourself and become a woman business owner, or maybe even different, you want to be a woman angel investor. These are things that we are still broaching from the gap of gender equality. These are things that frankly, women, we've got to push ourselves to get into this. But these are the tools that are going to help you give it, and also minimally get you to think about it. If you're thinking and you're on the edge, but if you're a successful woman and you want to take either your career, your investments, or you just want to give back, we hope that we're going to give you some tools, and we'll continue to do so throughout the year and bring you people that will help you grow your business, grow your wealth, or grow your ability to own something great. Sorry about that. Somebody should have turned that off. First, we're going to talk about the ability to become a new women entrepreneur. So one of the great things that's going on in the industry, and we've seen this come up with the increase of women entrepreneurs, specifically the really notable ones that have hit the billionaire list. Our favorite one, fashion mogul Tory Burch. She is investing in women entrepreneurs. And in fairness, she's not the only one we're going to cover, but we're going to talk a little bit about her specifically. Tory Burch is one of only 18 self-made women billionaires. Oh, by the way, she's engaged with an amazing rock that was just announced this past week, I think, head of Louis Vuitton. Congratulations to her. Well, U.S. fashion designer Tory Burch is a natural when it comes to entrepreneurship. She just judged Forbes 30 Under 30 list of millennials. And for young entrepreneurs, Burch is a role model. Think about it. She started with a product, which is $200 ballet flats, and she built it into a multi-billion-dollar brand in a decade. Now she is going to select her first class of her Tory Burch Foundation Fellows. Not funny, fellows. 10 women business owners will benefit from her mentorship, networking opportunities, and a $10,000 grant. Of these 10, they'll be chosen from 30 finalists by a team of the Tory Burch Foundation, and one fellow will earn an investment of $100,000 in her business. This is the first time that Tory is running this competition. She's long been dedicated to helping women start and sustain businesses. She's had a partnership with Bank of America, and her foundation that's also hosting this, the Tory Burch Foundation, offers low-cost loans to women entrepreneurs. Founded in 2009, the Tory Burch Foundation has been organizing mentoring and networking events for years. The designer is a big believer in the power of collaborating and rooting for other women. So this is something that if you want to get out there and you want to definitely see, and unfortunately this is not for women who are just thinking about it, because the competition is actually, a couple of these have already gone by, and then another one I think is due on Monday. So her Tory Burch fellow, a little bit about that. This is the criteria, and it is due January 12th, so next Monday, right? The Tory Burch fellow, your startup must be majority owned and managed by a woman. You must have been in operation for less than 5 years. Generate revenues, but less than $500,000, so you can't be completely in the red. And 20% of the evaluation of your company will be based on whether or not you are socially responsible. And that's one of the major criteria that I think that for folks that want to take this weekend and submit their applications online, you have to have these components. And again, how it works, 10 fellows will attend a 3-day workshop at the Tory Burch Foundation. Each fellow gets the $10,000 grant for business education and then gets to be a part of a business guidance program lasting a year hosted by the Tory Burch Foundation. And especially since this is an inaugural year, I would expect that Tory is going to be a huge part of that. The winner of the pitch competition will also get $100,000, which will be split into $50,000, of which is structured as a recoverable loan. Great, isn't that? The next one is Project Entrepreneur. This is hosted by a couple of my other favorite entrepreneurs, Rent the Runway. Rent the Runway, if you've only thought that they were good for gowns, they launched a new product line this, I think in January, that I'm going to sign up if I can remember to get there. Rent the Runway has a new product line where they're actually renting out designer clothes and handbags. And I think that's an absolutely phenomenal idea, because if you are a woman who's too busy working and you've got business meetings to go to, or you've got pitches to do and you not necessarily want to buy that suit, or you're only doing it for a couple months, or if you're like me and you just don't like wearing your clothes for more than a few times and then you forget about it, this is an absolute phenomenal new product. So I know I'm pitching for them, but seriously, you should check it out on Rent the Runway. They are hosting a project, it's called Project Entrepreneur. Unfortunately, it closes today. Someone's waving at me. It closes today, January 8th. And this program is much like Tori's, but a little bit different because it's a little bit earlier stage. Jenny Fleiss, who's one of the co-founders, they're very active about giving back to other women entrepreneurs, says, and I quote, "We want this program, Project Entrepreneur, to be way bigger than Rent the Runway. It's about solving problems from any industry." End of quote. Isn't that wonderful? So to qualify, your startup must be founded and run by at least one woman, as opposed to Tory Burch's, you have to be majority owned and managed. For Project Entrepreneur, you have to be founded and run by at least one woman. You must use technology as a part of the business model. You must be at the prototype or beta stage. And you must have received less than $100,000 in institutional funding. So you don't have any major investors that are giving you more than $100,000. How it works to qualify, and again, today's the deadline, 200 finalists will come to New York for a two-day workshop. Three winners of the pitch competition receives $10,000 each, and residency in a five-week accelerator program hosted by Rent the Runway. Well, that's priceless and timeless, actually. So do take a look at that. Unfortunately, that closes out today, and I think they have another round coming up. But definitely take a look at that for Project Entrepreneur hosted by Rent the Runway. Next on our list is Eileen Fisher's Women-Owned Business Grant Program. This one has been in existence, in fairness, for a much longer, 11 years, and it puts more money on the line. It also because of its tenure. Eileen Fisher's program is looking for companies that are up and running but need help scaling. So the application process opens up in April every year. So you've got some time, ladies. So if you are not a startup in the sense of that you're not just coming out of the gate, but you've been around for a while and you just need to get your company to the next level, say you need a new product launch. Say you want to buy some real estate and grow your staff so that you can grow. Say that you want to, you know, create some new innovation. This is great if you want to try to qualify for this program. So the startup qualifications are: you must be majority women-owned and women-led. You must be beyond the startup phase, but your revenues cannot exceed $1 million in the year that you are in the year before you apply. So last year you couldn't have exceeded $1 million. The companies are judged on their positive social and environmental impact, so both social and environmental, leadership practices, and proposed use of the funding, among other things. How it works to qualify: up to 10 companies will have the opportunity to network with other winners, including those from past years, for 3 days, and will be awarded a total of $100,000. So do take a look at that. We're going to go ahead and post that. It's going to go post tomorrow. And the title of it is New Mentorship and Funding Opportunities for Women Entrepreneurs. We'll post Project Entrepreneurs, Tory Burch Fellows, and Eileen Fisher's Women-Owned Business Grant Programs. Those aren't the only ones, ladies. There's definitely some others out there, but we wanted to highlight some of the ones we think that you'll want to stay focused on. While we're talking about the accelerated programs, Babson College is also creating a program. It's called WIN. I love this. It's called Women Innovating Now Lab. It's kicking off in Miami because there's been a strong partnership with Babson College down there. The Babson's, this is their press release, Babson's Women Innovating Now Lab, known as the WIN Lab, is designed to help women entrepreneurs launch successful businesses. The accelerator-like program offers training sessions and connects women entrepreneurs to a wide range of experts for guidance. It also provides access to strategic networks and co-working space so participants can build and expand their ventures. The WIN Lab will receive $800,000 in support from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation as part of a three-year grant to launch WIN Lab in Miami. The first cohort will begin this fall. The Center for Women's Entrepreneurial Leadership at Babson College launched the WIN Lab in Boston a few years ago. It has been designated as one of the top two specialty programs for excellence in entrepreneurship education by the United States Association for Small Business and Entrepreneurship. My goodness, that was a mouthful. Basically, what we're trying to say is Babson has some experience doing this. So the WIN Lab in Miami is not their first launch. They did one in Boston that's already been, I wouldn't say accredited, but it's been designated as a top excellence program. Susan Duffy, who's the executive director for the Center for Women's Entrepreneurial Leadership, said she and her co-founder, Heather Jean McNeil, both entrepreneurs, believed it was time to disrupt the accelerator model.
You gotta love it, Ben.
I have turned off every phone, and clearly I didn't do enough of it, so my apologies with technology. So do take a look at the accelerators around the country. They have less, and the reason why they are going up is accelerators around the country have less than 13% women. Babson, again, leading the front, is trying to do more to definitively give women a foothold in this. And by education and by mentorship and by community, I do absolutely agree that the people, the women who are going to come out of these accelerator programs are really going to excel. And so that's, so we've talked a little bit about women business owners, entrepreneurs, women who are really getting themselves into the mix of, you know, maybe 2016 is your year. Staying on the vein of a woman entrepreneur, let's just say that you already exist. So we've got some other things that we wanted to call out. Have you ever heard of co-working spaces? There's one that we're a pretty big fan of. We interviewed her last year. Felina Hansen is the CEO and founder of a company called Hera Hubs. Hera Hubs, if you go to their website, www.herahub.com, is a co-working space that's designed for women. And so when Felina created the organization, she was an entrepreneur who was working at home. But what she was finding was that she was, as most people who work from home, specifically women, you try to multitask. So you try to feed the cat and type, a document. You try to throw in some laundry in between meetings so that you can get back to your desk. Well, that doesn't result in the best maximum capacity that you can give your business. So she created Hera Hub in California. And you got to check these out. She's been interviewed by so many major news organizations, featured in Forbes, New York Times, you name it, Entrepreneur Magazine. But Hera Hub does a phenomenal job of bringing women entrepreneurs together in a co-working space so that they have the opportunity to network with each other, to also feed off of each other. And then she also has classes there. The great thing about Hera Hub also is that if you're a woman entrepreneur and you don't want to use your home address, or you want to have a professional look and feel and have meetings or have your mail sent somewhere, it's also a great place for having a virtual office. So it's a virtual office and a co-working space. Do check it out. But the other element that I want to bring to it is, if you're a woman who wants to expand, say you don't want to leave corporate America and you want to continue working in the, own a business, right? You're just not ready to do it, but you want to invest some of your money in owning a business. Hera Hubs is also expanding. So they are looking for entrepreneurs who want to expand the brand across the United States. Right now, they are predominantly located in Southern California. They're in Sorrento Valley, Mission Valley, Carlsbad. They just recently launched a Hera Hub in Washington, D.C. I was hopeful then when we were in Dallas and in Austin that we were going to get a Hera Hub out there. I'm now in Tampa hoping that we could find one out here. But ladies, do definitely check it out. The entry, or the barrier to entry in terms of cost, is something that it's far more reasonable than if you wanted a McDonald's or if you wanted to own another franchise. It's extremely affordable when you look at the other types of franchises out there. And the other thing about this franchise that I would highly suggest is, if you want to give back and you want to be able to work with other women, what better way to do it than to host a co-working space and be owner of that? So do take a look at it. HeraHub.com is a great place for women entrepreneurs to also go work there if you're looking for co-working space, but also if you're looking to become a women business owner. Definitely check that out. Next on our list is, we're going to talk about women who, a different segment where we need to see more women growth. So we definitely need to see more women entrepreneurs. We definitely need to see more women business owners, but we also need to see more women in the angel investor side. And that means who you're going to ask for capital. So, you know, you've got these grant programs that Tory Burch and Rent the Runway pitch to. But at the end of the day, these are also ladies and companies that had to at one point stand in front of a group of predominantly men and pitch their companies. And there's been a lot of conversation in the last year about how that has not been a very, how should I say, friendly space for women. A lot of male angel investors have been known, and again, not, this isn't the majority, this is just something that's happened in the past. There's just been a lot of sexist type comments, or, hey, can you, just things that male entrepreneurs, when asking for funding, have not had to witness in comparison to women. Pipeline Angel, it's Angel Investments. It's a program for women. It just closed, unfortunately, this past week. January 4th was the deadline. It's a six-month boot camp that introduces women to the ins and outs of angel investing. And I highly promote this because there's a lot of programs that we're going to talk about next, and we'll give you some of their links on where to go to be an angel investor. So they're looking for women who meet the accredited investor rule. So these are, you know, women who are fairly successful and that have capital to invest in, and they want to invest in these types of companies that are focused on giving money back to women. Pipeline is focused on building the woman angel investor. And this is important because if you are unsure about whether or not that you can invest, if you're unsure of whether you've got the chutzpah or what to look for, this bootcamp, it's gonna give you what you need, and it's gonna ask you, hey, you're gonna have to front $5,000 so we can help you figure out where you want to be investing for as an angel investor. The 6 month bootcamp, the application process for the first 6 months, spring, just ended. The great thing, though, is this program is actually going to take part in 11 cities for the spring. So it's Chicago, Columbus, Austin, Houston, Miami, Atlanta, Charlotte, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Boston, and New York City. Now, what you will notice about those 11 cities that I did talk about, none of those were west of the Mississippi. In fact, the farthest west, I would say, is probably Austin. So that's okay because, ladies, fall 2016 will include cities on the west. So the inaugural program, the deadline already passed. If you are looking and interested to become an angel investor and you want to do something with your money, Pipeline Angels is taking applications for the fall. And again, that's going to open up to the west coast. CEO Natalie Alberti Noguera says the reason why she started this: I love to see as many women who are interested in learning about angel investing apply. Angels for criteria, that means you're an accredited investor. The U.S. government defines somebody who makes a minimum individual income of $200,000 or joint income of $300,000 for the last 2 years and has a net worth of more than $1 million. The applicants must meet one of these definitions as well as have a strong interest in group learning models. If you want to do one-on-one, this is not the class for you, nor is this boot camp. Women should also have a passion for philanthropy or social change. The program encompasses education, mentoring, and practicing to give women a complete knowledge of angel investing. Oberti, she founded the Pipeline Angels in 2011 to serve as a bridge between philanthropy and angel investing. We're putting a face to the word angel that is different by putting women on it. So I think that's great. Definitely check it out, Pipeline Angels. Again, the program has already ended for the spring, but they are looking for folks that want to get into the fall program, which will also include what's going on the West Coast. It's going to open up to the West. We're also following up on something that happened late this fall. There was a hashtag, if you remember, that was hashtag FemaleFunders1000. It was a site that was looking to bridge technology, the industry and technology, and the gender gap of including successful women as entrepreneurs, investors, and corporate executives. So Female Funders is a site that's dedicated to providing women with the tools that they needed to begin angel investing. So the difference between Pipelines is it's an actual boot camp where you're going to get one-on-one, and Female Funders is an angel investing site that's going to let you do more of that self-study. Female Funders is the brainchild of Catherine Haig, who sold her first company, ShopLocket, to PCH last year at the age of 23. She's now the VP of leading hackathons for PCH. So this is definitely women who have experience because they've started their own companies, and it's something that I think that will help, especially if you want to now get into angel investing. Last but not least, we're going to go very quickly because we're running out of time. About companies that will actually continue to invest. They are both looking for angel investors, so women and men, but more importantly, they are companies to go to, organizations to go to if you're looking for seed investment. So Golden Seeds is one of my favorites. Know a number of women that are involved with that. Golden Seeds Angel Network has a national network of over 240 angel investors. It's been around since 2005, and it has a really good process in terms of getting applicants. So take a look at that. Springboard is more on the international front. They're a premier platform where entrepreneurs and investors and industry experts can come together to build great women-led enterprises. The other one that I know very well is the Women's Venture Capital Fund that invests in digital media and sustainable product and service. You also have Bell Capital LP, which is an early stage angel fund focused on building great companies in Michigan and other geographical regions of the Midwest and Southwest. What a hell of an opening podcast with phones ringing and now me talking. We hope you can kick off your 2016 in the right start to get your dreams started. That's it for the week. I apologize for ending this coughing my brains out, but do join us every week. 2016 is bound to be a great year for all of us women business owners, entrepreneurs, and women who just want to succeed. We hope that you had a great week, and we look forward to talking to you next week. Have a great day.